Welcome to the Lost Library, Seeker. Enjoy your stay.
Hi, I'm Matt, the host and game master for... host for Lost Library and game master for the Grayscale campaign, our first one that we're going to be kind of kicking things off with here. Joining me today to talk about the world of Grayscale are four of our cast members. First off, we got Alan.
Hello.
And we have Nora.
Hi.
And we have Joe.
Hi.
And Christina.
Hello.
So, you guys are part of our 10-person cast for Grayscale. Y'all are going to be rotating in and out of spots with, you know, kind of each episode of the game. But I figured, you know, why not bring some cast members to help me kind of tell our listeners what this world is all about. And what we're going to do is we're going to start off by talking about the system that we're going to be playing in, which is a game called Monster of the Week. It's part of the kind of umbrella of Powered by the Apocalypse games, which are, I think it's fair to say, this is like right in the dead center of the scale between rules light and rules crunchy.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's fair. It's a very narrative system.
Yeah. And there are enough rules to kind of keep things moving along, but also a lot of guidance in regards to, hey, listen, if this gets in the way of your story, just don't bother. Which I really enjoy. And it's a system that's designed to allow you to play games that are based on or inspired by Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Supernatural, Ash versus the Evil Dead, things like that, which is a really fun way, kind of hunters battling against the monsters in the dark. So what I want to do is talk to you guys real fast about your experience with this system. Alan, how familiar are you with Powered by the Apocalypse games?
Pretty familiar. I have ran quite a few in my time. Other examples may include Masks, may include Worlds in Peril, Monster Hearts. Honestly, I think my favorite thing about this particular Powered by the Apocalypse system is the histories thing, where you connect with other players and you have instant relationships with other players, and it helps you kind of build a net of backstory that connects everyone.
Yeah, that's some real fun stuff that we're going to dive into here in the next couple of weeks. In fact, our next two episodes that come out on this channel are going to be our character introduction episodes, where half the cast at a time, we're going to go around and talk about who y'all are playing and what your connections to each other are, and I'm really excited to see kind of how those have all been fleshed out since we did character creation. I think a lot of that really did, not alter, but helped shape the character concepts y'all had. Nora, you're an RPG designer.
Yeah.
Hey.
I guess so, yay. Yeah.
So what's your take on Powered by the Apocalypse games?
My take. Right. I like them. I've run a couple of them. I've played a couple of them. I took my 5th edition D&D game and converted it to Masks, and that's what I'm going to run after this recording.
Wow.
That sounds awesome.
It's really fun. I think that the most interesting thing for me is the whole moves idea, where instead of just having like a mechanic for an action, you have a fictional prompt that triggers a mechanical component, and that can be triggered by accident or intentionally. For example, in Monster Hearts, the move Turn Someone On is not always called for by the person who's doing the turning on. The on turning? Whatever.
I don't know.
The turn on E?
There are definitely some times when I've thought that, especially with the cast that we've assembled, that maybe I should have done this all in Monster Hearts, but, you know, we're already turning pretty hard into the CW drama anyways.
So there will be kissing.
Yeah, that was always going to happen. I'm just going to have to do an episode later where y'all get to be Monster Hearts characters and then get hunted by your hunters. because I like crushing dreams.
Yes, you do.
Joe, tell me about your experience with Powered by the Apocalypse games.
Yeah, so I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I feel like I don't have too much experience in Powered by the Apocalypse specifically. I have some role-playing chops, but I believe I've only played about 3 or 4 different games. Two Apocalypse World games, currently playing in a Masks game, and this Monster of the Week game. So far, what I'm really enjoying about the kind of, for the setting of Monster of the Week, like, because it's so ingrained into culture, there isn't, like, this big thing that the rule set has to come with that says, here is the setting of this particular game. Like, Masks gives you a city setting, and it basically is an amalgamation of New York or Metropolis, like, just slammed together from comic books. The main thing I really love about Powered by the Apocalypse games is failing gives you experience, because that is the most true-to-life thing in a role-playing game ever.
That's real true. I dig that mechanic a lot. I never remember to credit people with the experience, so I'm going to have to do that. I have to be better about that for the show. Christina, talk to me about your experience with Powered by the Apocalypse.
Well, I'm, for Powered by the Apocalypse games, I'm kind of in the same boat as Joe. I don't have an awful lot of experience with role-playing in general. I didn't start doing any kind of role-playing until roughly, actually about a year ago today as we were recording this. But I've played, we've got kind of an ongoing casual campaign that's set in Worlds of Peril, and we did test games for Lost Library, also using Monster of the Week, and of course I listened to The Adventure Zone, where they did an arc set in Monster of the Week, which was a good way to help get, I guess, another perspective on how games like this can go.
Yeah, and I think the comparison to The Adventure Zone little mini arc that they did the Monster of the Week one that Griffin ran, and they're doing one in another Powered by the Apocalypse game called Urban Shadows, that I would love to dig into at some point, that they're running right now. And I think it's important that when I heard they were doing Monster of the Week, I got real mad, because I was like, I'm gonna have to throw all of my plans out the window, because I'm gonna get accused of just copying Taz, and I can't do that. But I think all four of you guys who have played with me in the test games, y'all would probably back me up by saying I GM very differently from any of the McElroys.
Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you like to cause more pain.
I'm not a great comedic GM. I am a really great, I'm going to hurt these precious children that you've developed GM.
We're here for the jokes.
This kind of segues really nicely, in a roundabout way, into an addition that we're making to the game system. Powered by the Apocalypse, specifically Monster of the Week, doesn't have like a traditional sanity stat at all. And so I've kind of tooled around with one of those, and we're going to be adding in something that we call stability. It's going to be very patterned after, you know, some other stats in Monster of the Week and Powered by the Apocalypse. And it's going to be a sliding scale where as you move down, eventually it'll start having some negative consequences to your character, and eventually it will cause your character to kind of just snap, to have a mental break, and then something very big will happen at that mm-hmm. point. Unlike some other systems, specifically Call of Cthulhu, the sanity scale, or stability, as we're calling it, isn't a lethal scale. This is not another hit point pool. You're not going to die from having a stability break. Something's going to happen narratively to your characters. And the stability will have a chance to carry over from session to session. So what do you guys think about adding in something like this? Some way to kind of just gauge how your character is responding to the stress that's being put upon them?
I think in a way, for the kind of narrative progression like this is going to take. Like, we're doing a podcast that is going to be serialized. It's kind of necessary. Like, I think you could just get together and do like a campaign of this and it will all be wrapped up. But with the plans we have going forward, it's necessary to put something in place so that when we do see a lot of weird stuff, like, that's going to impact our character more than just us playing the character differently. And I like it as like kind of a benchmark of kind of notes that my character will hit as like assuming the stability mechanic will go down for him or her. But yeah, it's a nice kind of like bookmark sort of place for me.
I think it's a really interesting mechanic to have, especially given, partially given from the fact that I have played in, I'm just going to say, several of the test games that were that we did before we started this, and knowing some of the things that Matt has been setting up for this world, how having, don't you smile like that, knowing some of the inspirations that Matt will be taking as the GM for this game, having a stability stat is going to be very helpful. And also taking into account the characters that we have designed, who are, I'm just going to say, not necessarily the most emotionally, mentally, physically stable to begin with.
Speak for yourself.
Oh no,
I didn't say all. I said some.
I'm palate adjusted.
I will back Christine up on this.
Are we allowed to say that we have a few teenage characters in the mix?
Oh yeah, yeah. And you know, teenagers are not historically the most stable individuals on Earth.
No.
Memories.
I think my favorite part of the stability mechanic, though, is the break. That it is not lethal, that, you know, it could radically alter your character, but in a way that feels organic based on the things that they've been through. You know, I think giving or even forcing a character to grow like that is a very interesting concept.
I will say, still kind of closing up talk about stability, I have diagrammed out several different breakpoints and kind of what could happen there.
Nerd!
So Christina's character starts with a -2 instead of right off the bat. I'm not that
stability?
Vindictive. Yes, that'll transfer over to Nora, who, because she's playing a teen, already has a -2, so bounces out. No, none of that is true. We have not decided on character stabilities and where they're starting yet. We're gonna play around with that during our character intros a little bit. So I will say that, you know, I've diagrammed out some of these different reactions, like what happens when a character breaks. Some of it's going to be minor, like you could just permanently hallucinate. Some of it's going to be major, where whatever happens in your mind when you break could be so severe that it takes divine or infernal intervention to get you back to parity.
Or otherworldly intervention.
We'll get there. There's going to be a lot of different reactions, and I'm still toying around, and this will come up later. This will probably be a bigger group decision, but I do want to mention that the possibility is out there that there could be a betrayer mechanic tied to stability as well.
Dun dun dun.
I still need to workshop that a little bit, because there's a part of me that doesn't want to do that kind of lasting harm to any of your characters.
At least wait until the second season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we make it that far.
It's interesting to see how far we'll chip away at Matt's morality with the inane banter that goes on between our characters, as to how quickly he introduces this.
I feel like within a couple months, I'm just going to be like, oh, right, so we're just turning the mortality dial up to 11 real fast.
Yeah.
So that's going to stability is something that I'm excited to see how well it plays with our groups once we actually start getting into the episodes proper. And I'm also completely prepared to just, if it doesn't work, to wash our hands of it and move on. And just do something that best serves the story that we're trying to tell. Christina, you mentioned something about otherworldly support. And I want any of y'all to tell me what the three hard and fast rules about the world of Grayscale that I've given y'all. Tell me what those hard and fast rules are.
Well, I'll start because I'm still a little salty about it. But there are no fey creatures in Grayscale.
No fey. Hard and fast.
I thought the first one was to not talk about Grayscale.
No, the first one was you do not fuck with time travel.
That is a Matt Hoadley personal rule. Don't fuck with time travel. Says the guy who is deliberately making a series of this ongoing campaign story all about how time's already fucked. I'm not a hypocrite at all in my storytelling.
I didn't say it.
No.
And that you also played in a game of Harry Potter where you went back to being an 11-year-old and fucked around with time travel too.
Good times. Unrestrained Matt put back in a teenage body is a mistake, as we learned. I made all of the best friends in about a day. So Alan's right. There are no fey creatures. Hard and fast rule, there are no fey creatures. What are the other two rules?
I don't remember. Let me see if I've got this written.
There are none. Let's go with there are no aliens to start with.
There are no aliens. There are no extraterrestrials of any kind. In as far as y'all know, there is zero life on other planets that is caring at all about Earth.
Which, you know, also covers the Cthulhu Mythos, because they're all technically aliens.
We'll get
but
to
maybe
that.
Maybe we have another rule about
Nora,
that.
Go ahead.
I know what the third one is, but I don't remember what version of that you, like, what nomenclature you used for that subject.
Oh, saying, because I had some very specific wording.
No, it's the second half that I don't remember. There are no recorded incidents of...
anything Lovecraftian.
Okay. I wasn't sure what sort of, like, nomenclature you wanted to use for that.
I think Lovecraftian probably best covers that. The Cthulhu mythos, I think, is also a pretty good catch-all. There are no recorded incidents in the world of Grayscale of anything from the Cthulhu mythos, anything Lovecraftian, anything like that. And I will say, addressing Joe's concern that those are alien, I've always kind of mentally rejected the idea that they are like an extraterrestrial alien, and more that they're like a extra reality force.
Extra planar.
Yeah. No, yeah. Not even planar.
Well, they're eldritch.
Like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the
Crystal
Skull.
Outside reality. How dare you pollute our precious, precious creative enterprise with that toxic garbage?
That movie was fine.
I'm so offended and hurt.
It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't fantastic.
I haven't seen it.
It's got a cool monkey scene. Welcome to our Kingdom of the Crystal Skull review podcast, where this week I'm going to fire myself out of the catapult while I sit in a fridge.
Oh, are we going to do that thing where it's like, what, 6 seconds of Star Wars where we go by, like, frame by frame of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Either that
and
or
we just
watch
talk
Kingdom
about
of the
it?
Crystal Skull every week.
Dear listeners, Matt has taken off his glasses, his head is in his hands, and Nora can win the award for first person to break Matt on the podcast.
Yay!
I will be sending you your certificate later in the mail.
Excellent.
I'm so mad right now. I would rather have a drill put through my ear than deal with that movie again.
So, changing topics.
Yeah, we're going to move on. So, those are kind of the hard and fast rules. There are no fey creatures, and we are eventually going to explore why that is. There are no extraterrestrial aliens that are, at least none that are interested in what's going on Earth. And there are no recorded incidents of any incursion by anything Lovecraftian or Chthonic. All of my wording is very carefully chosen. You can interpret that as you will. So we're going to move on. The world of Grayscale is very much our world. In fact, when I've talked to y'all about the setting, what I've said several times is that it's set more or less tomorrow. That's an idea that I heard from someone who was describing the James Bond movies, where James Bond movies are always set roughly 15 minutes into the future. So the idea is that more or less it's all the world we're used to. But if the plot requires us to have something that's a little bit more futuristic, that's fine. We can do that. We're not going to go over the top. We're not having like hoverboards or spaceships or anything like that, but
you don't think the feds are up to some shit right now?
Oh, maybe, but whatever.
Oddly specific denial.
I've got people working on things. But that's kind of the setting for Grayscale. It is the world we know. I don't even think we can use the argument that it's like the better timeline, because this is a world that has vampires and werewolves other nasty.
So the better timeline.
It's definitely the better timeline.
I don't know. Margaret Thatcher is still canonical.
That's true.
Joe maybe did that's that just to a himself. Specific British thing. Yeah.
You did that to yourself,
but
buddy.
Is she still around, or is she just like a facet of the world?
She is the eternal prime minister.
Oh, boy.
No.
So you're saying zombies are involved?
No. God. No, none of that part's true. Margaret Thatcher did exist at some point in the history of our world. But unlike the world we live in, as far as we know, there are vampires, there are werewolves, there is actual magic in the world. There are witches and wizards. There are zombies. There are ghosts.
Only if you know how to find them, Christina.
I'm just ignoring y'all. There are some other things that exist out in this world that are, you know, kind of spooky and like to prey upon the mortal world, which is where y'all come in. Y'all are playing the hunters, the ones who are supposed to stand against the darkness. So we're going to talk a lot more about your characters in the next couple weeks, so I don't want to hit on that too much. I do want to ask you guys to tell me what the one class that y'all were not allowed to choose is.
The Chosen.
Yep.
And do Joe or Nora, do y'all remember why I said y'all couldn't play that?
She is otherwise involved.
Because you're the GM and you said so.
Damn, that's a way better answer.
Nora redeems back the points that she lost by causing Matt to think about the Unthinkable movie.
I mean, look, GM Fiat is a good power to have, but
it rarely ever works.
Joe is right. There is a chosen in the world. There is the one person who's destined to stand against the blah 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 blue.
Don't you blah 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 blue?
I don't have time to go into the entire Buffy intro right now. Also, I'm not Giles. I can't do it as well.
Very few people can do things as well as Anthony Stewart Head. Don't feel bad.
True. But the Chosen in our world is otherwise engaged, or I think perhaps a better description that the character that Alan's playing that we'll meet next week would say, she's missing. That's how Mallory would describe it.
Very much so.
Spoilers! Alan's character just got named.
That's fine.
True.
Listen, Alan's in the group that's going to be talking about their character next week. It's fine. All you know is that her name's Mallory.
And now you know that she is a she. Because Mallory is actually a gender neutral name. Good job, Matt.
Galaxy Brain, all names are gender neutral.
Whoa! Anyway, let's see. What else do we have to talk? We have to talk about the city.
Yeah, the city.
We have to talk about the setting of all of the episodes of our game, of our games for this first series. They are all set in the fictional city, mid-sized college town of Port Avalon, Oregon. Mm-hmm. So, tell me about Port Avalon, any of y'all.
There is a warehouse district for killing things in.
In case we need to go Super Sentai.
I mean, listen, every good adventure story has to have a warehouse district. It's where there are no civilians and plenty of bad guys.
I think there's a combination, like, roller skate arena and church?
Oh, the skate church. Yeah.
Skate church?
Also, I don't think it's called...
Yeah, Riley Hopkins.
I don't think it's called a roller skate arena, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's that's going to be a fun area where probably your character and Riley's character are going to largely hang out, which is good. Maybe even Travis's character. Yeah, Skate Church is there.
There's also a university, right?
Probably more of a college, but yes. Still haven't named that one. It hasn't really come up a whole lot yet.
Because...
You know what has? The high school.
Yeah. Yes, because of the age parity in our characters. Oops!
We're going to talk about this more as we get into character conversations in the next 2 weeks. Y'all went directions I did not expect with your characters. But that's fine. It's good. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch these dynamics happen. So, Joe, do you remember the name of the high school?
Oh, boy. It's Mallory, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, with regards to the kind of Port Avalon as a whole... I'm the one British guy on this, so I don't know what a small college Oregon town looks like. So it was really interesting to try and look things up without it being douchebag hipster stuff.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example that's very, very relevant to my life experience and something that you could probably actually just get on a train and go visit at some point, Joe. Sterling, Scotland.
I have been there. Yes, so...
There you go. It's that place.
I have a context now. Finally, after all these years.
So, what else is there? We talked about the skate church. We've talked about the high school, the fact that there is a college, that there's a warehouse district. What else kind of stands out for y'all about Port Avalon?
The secret underground network of various creatures and magical things?
There is an underground community... I don't think it's literally underground, although I have toyed with the idea of having an ancient civilization buried under the city, but I don't know yet. That might be a bit too weird even for us. So there are a few other things of note about the city. The first one is most of the city...
churches.
There are a bunch of old churches. The city itself is about 200 years old or so. It was like made in the 1800s at some point was when it was founded. It's largely on like an island kind of in the middle of a river.
With like suburbs around the outside of the cove the island's in, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some suburbs there. There's a couple other like fragment islands around it that have some settlements on them. There is a big river. There's a tributary of the river that runs off to the north that has some, like, fancy ritzy houses built along it. There are a couple of, like, satellite towns. What are they called? Bedroom towns?
I still call them suburbs. Townships?
It's like a colloquial name for, like, around Austin, Texas, where I grew up, there was Austin, where everyone worked, and then, like, the surrounding towns where everyone slept.
All that's coming to mind is tent cities, but I know that's not right.
That's not it. I think it might have been, like, bedroom communities, something like that, which is a weird word and a weird phrase. I've never liked it, but it's pretty accurate to what these are. They're just some, like, small towns.
Yeah, bedroom communities,
Bedroom communities, that's it, yeah. Just kind of outside of Port Avalon that y'all are probably visiting, as befits the Pacific Northwest. There's a mountain range pretty nearby. There's a national forest right near y'all. A lot of it's heavily wooded, so lots of good, spooky, mysterious settings.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it is in Oregon, so, I mean, mist.
Oh, yeah. There is, like, an active vampire community that we're aware of. I have told y'all that there is a at least one pack of werewolves nearby. that some characters are a bit more familiar with than others.
And by that, they mean you mean kissing.
No, I don't think so.
Sure, Jan.
Probably knowing the cast of characters y'all made, probably. Mm-hmm.
I would rather kiss a vampire. That's on the record.
There you go. That's now preserved for all time. I mean, a werewolf just smells like wet dog 100% of the time. That's horrible. Let's see. What else do y'all think we need to kind of front load here for the world of Grayscale?
I mean, I could put you on the spot and ask for any notable NPCs.
Who's the mayor?
Oh, y'all are gonna meet the mayor.
So he's a snake demon. Got it.
I'm not copying Buffy, for the love of God. No, there is a notable NPC that y'all can go ahead and know about right now. His name is Milo. One of y'all is much more familiar with him than the rest of y'all. She created him. He is, I think, for lack of a better term, he's y'all's Oracle. Not Batman Oracle. Like, Oracle at Delphi Oracle.
Mmm. He's a seer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a pot dealer.
No.
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 He sees things while doing pot.
Definitely not.
No.
An archangel made him what he is. So, if you want to start going down that road, Alan, that's on you.
You're gonna have to fight me for Milo.
You're gonna leave Milo alone. He is a precious, precious angel.
Yes, only Matt gets to torture and kill player characters and NPCs.
That's fair.
I think the last thing we want to talk about is something that's been alluded to, and they were the test games that each of y'all played.
Yes.
Do I have a representative here from every single one of them?
I think you might.
Hot dang.
3 games and 66% success rate.
Yeah.
4 games.
I know. I was in 75% of them, and I survived 66% of those games.
Yep.
Yeah, no one made it out of mine alive.
That's true.
Yeah.
I was especially mean on that first one, and I do apologize. I took some narrative missteps and shoehorned y'all into just Deathsville real fast.
Hey, my character didn't die on screen.
Oh, that's true. Your character might still technically be alive, Nora.
That's what I've been like wondering in the back of my head. I'm scared about it.
How much do we want to talk about the test games, Matt? Do we want to just do like... recap or like...
No, all we're really going to say about these is... some things from these test games are going to come up. The broad strokes of what happened in them are canon in the world. Are canon in the world of Grayscale. They did happen. Maybe not exactly as y'all played them. But, you know, more or less, like, the big events happened. Like, in Alan and Nora's game, no one walked out of that situation alive.
No, we didn't.
In the game that Joe played, where y'all went into the Smithsonian, one character did make a particularly nasty deal, and
stupid.
That's probably gonna happen.
Go with stupid.
Show up again. yeah, there's the character of Milo that I just described is a player character from the fourth test game. Christina played him.
Yes.
And she and one of our other cast members, Melissa, made a pair of characters that were so good that I'm keeping them around.
They're still alive.
They're still alive. It's great. They're fine and dandy. One's a demon, but whatever. There was a trio of characters that are now vampires and have just like formed their own little coven that wanders around killing bad monsters. So,
yes.
You know.
Goth lovers.
Good times.
Goth lovers on motorbikes. It's the best.
Yes. And their third wheel.
The eternal third
and the,
wheel.
And the stick in the mud.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Yes.
So all of these things did happen. And I want to kind of just tease this and start laying some groundwork early. There are plans in the near, well, not near future. There are plans in the future to run a Patreon so that I can, help out these awesome cast members that we're going to have on Lost Library. And not just in Grayscale, but also in a forthcoming campaign that Alan's going to GM. And a third that we're in way early pre-production on, planning stuff for. But we're going to be launching a Patreon at some point down the line. So that I can compensate these awesome cast members and also pay editors so that just a few of us aren't bashing our heads into keyboards for no redemptive value.
But then sometimes you get works of Shakespeare.
Sometimes. Listen, those monkeys work hard. but that's always down the line. we're going to be well established by the time that happens. Y'all are going to have lots of warning listeners. But one thing that I do want to kind of tease now is there are already kind of plans to release those stories from the test games to patrons as a reward level down the line. I'm not entirely sure what medium that's going to be in. My personal pie-in-the-sky dream hope is that I can con some of the excellent artists that are on the cast and that I am friends with to do some comic book work on that. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but those test games happened, and they exist and are true in this world. And somewhere down the line, y'all are going to be able to hear them. And I'm actually pretty excited about that. So, next week, we're going to have the first batch of our character introductions. Alan, Christina, and Joe are going to be back for that one, along with two other cast members. And then the week after that, we're going to have our second batch where Nora and the other four cast members are going to be talking about their characters. And then after that, our very first episode will drop.
Yes. Get hype. Get hype. Get hype.
We're moving right along. Yeah. Like, favorite, subscribe, reblog, retweet, tell all your friends. I think you are legally bound by an agreement to share everything that we produce on here with everyone you know.
Go to all of your local libraries and download the episode.
Yes. If you find me at a convention, I might have like a USB drive that has all the episodes that we've recorded on it already for you to enjoy. I don't know. We'll see. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope this introduction to our world and to our interactions as a group are kind of building hype with you as much as we're getting all hyped for this. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Lost Library is a production of the Fifth Draw family of podcasts and can be found at fifthdraw.com. You can email us at lostlibrary@fifthdraw.com or follow us on Twitter @LostLibraryCast.